Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 524. It's Friday of Memorial Day weekend. Have a great Memorial Day. Get out and barbecue a wiener, or get together with people, or go outside and see what it's like out of doors, or ignore everyone and stay on your computer. I may do one of those things. I would like to say that I will be performing at Wise Guys in near Salt Lake City, West Valley City, Utah, May 29th, 30th, and 31st. Go to wiseguyscomedy.com to get tickets for that. And then coming back to Portland, Helium, June 12th, 13th, and 14th, go to heliumcomedy.com/Portland. Come on out and say hi. Developing the new hour of stand-up, and it's been super fun. So come out. I would like to thank for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. By the way, I mean, I don't even know if I should say this. I would have talked about this even if they hadn't been a sponsor of the podcast. On May 28th, Spike TV took over the Apollo Theater in New York for a one-night-only all-star comedy tribute to Don Rickles. And I couldn't be there, of course, because I work in Los Angeles, but I had a bunch of friends there, and everyone said it was absolutely incredible. And the lineup is insane. It's like, it's Seinfeld and Letterman and Jon Stewart and Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Tracy Morgan. And then there are special appearances by Kimmel and Johnny Depp and De Niro and Scorsese and Bob Newhart, Ray Romano, Regis Philbin, and Brad Garrett. So that is May 28th, 9 p.m. on Spike TV. They're basically just coming out and paying tribute to Don Rickles. And I have so wanted to get Don Rickles on the podcast, but he's a little weird about talking about comedy. Which if he were on, I would make him talk about comedy. So anyway, watch the tribute. Get your Rickles fix on Spike TV, May 28th, 9 p.m. I would like to thank them for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, which is Dave Attell. Dave Attell is back. He has a new series on Comedy Central called Underground. It's on Saturday nights. And also his newest special, Roadwork, is available on cc.com. Always great when Dave drops by. So here you go. Nerdist Podcast, number 524, with Dave Attell.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Be on camera.
You a little self-conscious?
What a disheveled my hair and wear a wrinklier shirt.
Yeah. Oh, just to keep the brand consistent?
Yep.
Sorry. Graham, the Comedy Film Nerds, are making a podcast documentary, so they're doing some recording right now. Dave Attell sits in our Meltdown studio. Hey, Dave Attell.
How's it going, guys?
Have you been?
Thanks for having
me in. Hey, of course. Anytime. I meant that when I said you can come back anytime you want.
You remember the last time? Well, actually, I've only been on
This is the third time.
You sure about that?
I'm almost positive.
I think you're right. Okay, yeah. So the first two times we did it at like a really fancy corporate building, and now here we are in the back of a comic book store.
That's right. This is way better, though.
This is better.
We were using one of Ryan Seacrest's unused studios at E, and it always felt weird. It always felt weird there.
It was weird just people walking by, you know, just staring at us.
Because we were in this fishbowl.
And so people think you're supposed to be really important when they see you doing official stuff in microphones, mm-hmm. and then they just see us, and they'd be really confused.
They'd be like, am I supposed to know who those are?
Yeah.
Where are the Kardashians?
Those. What are those things?
What are those things? They're humans. I don't understand.
But I like how you said it was one of Ryan's many recordings. Like, he has safe houses all over the... just in case he wants to drop a radio show.
Well, so, you know, I think he's more of a workaholic than I am. So yes, he might go on vacation really and be like, oh my God, guys, I got to record a radio show. And I said, quick, buy that thing.
Build a radio station.
Yeah, and he could. He could buy that thing with any one of his numerous
jobs. If he doesn't work for more, like, it's like if there's like an hour between jobs, he disappears.
Yeah, and he fades away.
And he never existed. That's the craziest part.
So like the brother and the sister from Back to the Future in the picture, he just starts to fade away.
No, but yeah, you're right, because they never existed.
Because then they would have never existed. They would have been erased from existence. So what are you in LA for a while now, or are you just here for a couple days?
That was the most gentle slam of Ryan Seacrest I've ever seen in my life.
I don't have anything bad to say.
Yeah, I know, it wasn't bad at all. It was great. It was kind of like a tip of the hat, you know?
I don't know.
It's been done.
I hear.
Well, not only that, but it's like he doesn't do anything wrong. It's just
he doesn't
like
do anything wrong.
I don't, you know, like the programming that he makes. It's not. I don't watch it, but that doesn't mean that I, you know, he seems like a nice guy. I mean, every time I've met him, he's been cordial and sweet, and I don't know. I feel like it's. I'm trying not to just quickly judge people without knowing, which is sort of a weird thing because as comics, we kind of have to take stands on things.
Snap
you have
judgment.
To take a side.
Yes.
But to comedic effect. But I feel like a lot of our culture just goes, look at that guy. He's probably about all these things, and I don't really know because I don't know him. But I'm going to say that anyway and fuck him.
Sure. I'm down for that.
I didn't know we could drop the F-bomb on this. I've been holding back for the first couple
minutes. No, this
is
the internet. You can do whatever you want.
You've been on this before. We talked about Dave's old porn.
Oh, that's right. But I don't remember dropping the F-bomb.
Do you want to?
Now I feel like it's too, like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's too much, you know, yeah. It's got to let it, like, fly, like, you know, organic.
Yeah, you want it to be, you want it to be an organic F-bomb.
Fuck, you have a fan in here?
Yeah, okay, I do. That's great. That was natural.
Remember when you were just saying about being organic, that felt real forced.
That felt forced.
Yeah. I can't imagine you, David Tell, the character, being that blown away that there's a fan in here.
Well, blown away?
I was just trying to, like...
I'm going to hit you in the arm.
All right. So, yeah, I'm in town, guys. I'm a horrible self-promoter. I don't know. How are you with the self-promoting? You guys seem to be both of the generation.
He's the worst at it.
I'm getting better at it.
No, you guys are millennials. Come on. This is your thing.
I'm not a millennial.
You're not?
I'm a Gen Xer.
All right.
Jonah's a Gen Xer, too. You're on the cusp. You just missed the cutoff for millennials.
Just missed the cutoff. I'm not a millennial.
Really?
I'm actually like...
What is the cutoff again?
83 is when millennials started.
Oh my God, really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's when they invented those.
Yeah, they say that Generation X ended at 81.
Oh, really?
I was born in 82.
Oh, so you're in between your generation lists.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Wow.
That's why I do horrible at colleges and at adult clubs.
We'll be right back. That is great. That is great. Finally, a voice of reason. Well, that is just perfect. But I would say that, like, the promotion, because, you know, I'm out here to promote two things, okay? I did the Roadwork special. We were talking about this, Jonah and I, earlier. And then the Comedy Underground
show. Comedy Underground, the Comedy Central show.
Yeah, so that's kind of the... I like to think of that as their show. It's for the comics, especially the dirtier, more raw blue, you know, acts, which are getting, it's like an endangered species. It's hard to find a place for these people, a platform for them to do these great dirty jokes because everything is so now filtered and, you know, there's just so much, there's so much political correctness. And I know that's kind of like a hack term now too, but there really is so much. I guess the audience is so tight on all that stuff that it really is getting harder and harder to do these kind of shows. So the whole idea of this was Comedy Central going, like, we wanted you to do an uncensored late night show. And since I am 1,000 years old and I remember before, you know, all this kind of, you know,
the printing
PC
press
stuff.
And,
yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
When you and your slaves would roll up in a, you know, no, I mean, like, I remember the times when it was just like you go in the audience, you know, they liked it, they didn't like it, and it was over. Now it's, you know, a whole to do. And we just wanted to recreate that in a small club setting, which is, you know, as you know, there's nothing better than a club show. So,
but you know, what's really interesting is that I just assume, like, oh, everyone loves really dirty humor, and not everyone does.
Nope.
I find that even on our, you know, like if I'm on Twitter and I'm like, I just drop a super dirty joke, I'm like, oh, everyone's cool, they'll totally get this. Yeah. There's a handful of people like, hey man, why'd you got it? I'm like, oh, I don't know. I just thought everyone was down with this. I guess it's just
nope.
Yeah.
Yep. No, they're not.
Why does it have to be family friendly? I don't understand that.
I don't know. I guess, well, I think there's this idea that, like, everything has to be for everyone.
Do you think it's like people, because there is an art to dirty jokes, do you think people, like, just assume when they hear dirty joke, they think it's like, oh, that's like a shock humor. That's easy.
Yeah, I think
there's some
do.
Truth to that, but there's also, like you said, there is an art to every joke, because I think writing a joke is difficult, any joke. And, you know, the comics that I really do enjoy, who are great joke writers, are usually clean, and they can dirty it up, you know? And I would say that what you consider dirty is probably not what I consider dirty, and sure. What he considers is everybody has their own line in the sand.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you want an audience that kind of gets that. And, you know, I've been very lucky over these many years in comedy that my audience does get it. You know, they get that it's just a joke, and they get that, like, I'm trying to, you know, take it to that level, and they appreciate it, I assume.
Well, this is not an...
They don't show the appreciation at the merch table, I'll tell you that. I'm sitting there like a special needs kid, just like in a pile of T-shirts. So,
Don't you want to hear these jokes again?
In T-shirt form? Yeah. But this is not an age comment, this is just a general term, but you were sort of grandfathered in the sense that people knew what you were about. Like,
right.
If you were starting off as a dirty comic now...
Oh, forget about
it'd be kind of tough.
Horrible.
It'd be kind of tough, but people, it's sort of like South Park's the same way. Like, it came on just before everything else.
Yeah.
That people are like, oh yeah, but that's South Park, or that's a tell.
South Park really did step up, and they really did, like, take a lot of hits for all of us, because back in the early days, they were being attacked left and right by a million different groups, you know, just like people like, that's not right, and this is inappropriate. I mean, so they really did step up. You know, the fact that, like, those guys really, like, that show is like a multi-layered show where there's, like, something always behind the
sure.
joke.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, you can't thank them enough for doing that. And that's, like, what Comedy Central... you know, when they do it right, they do it really right. Like with Amy's show.
Yeah.
Your show is also like another late night show where I assume anything goes,
yeah.
right? So there you go. And, you know, I assume your show is also uncensored, right? The Meltdown show.
Yeah, yeah, we do. Yeah, it's not.
Just bleep it out.
Just fuck is the only thing I think we can't.
You can't drop the F-bomb over there.
Yeah.
How about a heck or a darn?
golly, no.
We do, but they just bleep it.
Well.
And we try not to. But what I realized was that, there was a really interesting thing that happened in the beginning when we first started doing the show, and audiences were coming in where they didn't know what the show was that they were coming to see.
For the Meltdown.
No, for At Midnight, the Comedy Central show. And so so they kind of didn't know – some of the audiences didn't know what to make of it at first, and we didn't have a warm-up yet.
Oh, you're talking about the actual audience?
The actual taping,
audience.
Yeah. Okay. And so what was happening was – the audiences were coming in a little tighter. They weren't being warmed up. So the comics were going dirty really fast just to try to get a reaction out
yes.
of the audience. And what we realized was that when Brody came on board and started doing warm-up, the comics stopped being so dirty because they didn't feel like they had to, like, oh, I need a quick – I just need something, you know?
Yeah.
So I think sometimes it's just that reflex of, like, I'm a naughty child and I'm going to say whatever just to get a reaction, just so I can get something from the audience.
I understand. And now that really is a Twitter, it's a very media platform friendly show, right? I mean, like, all the different.
Yeah.
So I assume they pay you in bitcoins. Since
we
it's
get paid in bitcoin and internet
it's a futuristic
dollars.
Futuristic show.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, you know, one day our salary might be a dollar, and the next day it could be $2 million,
yeah.
and then
yeah.
the next day it could drop sharply again.
Got no one to bail.
And then we could owe them money. So I don't know. It's sort of up in the air, but this is part of the crazy digital culture that we're in.
See, we're all fighting the same fight. I think that's what you're trying to say.
We're all fighting the same fight.
I'm Mr. Bring It Back Home. We're all trying to do.
But sometimes people say, you know, because obviously as an advocate of comedy, of like, well, this comedy
yes.
is how we deal with tragedy. It's how we deal with horrible things. And then people say, like, yes, but you still, you know, fuck you for, you know, comics whine because they don't just get to talk about whatever they want, but you can really hurt people and you can really affect people and you need to bear responsibility for that.
No.
I think that there's different levels of that, which is like if you're in a club setting and people have paid to come in there and they know exactly what they're going to see, that they should kind of roll with it. And that, you know, it really is like it's okay not to like something. I mean, you know, I've lived a pretty long life, and there's been many situations where I've not liked something and I kind of just left and moved on to the next thing. You know,
you didn't mount a campaign against it.
Yeah. Like I saw Jaws 3D. You know, it wasn't that great.
Cancel Jaws.
Wasn't that great? It was something to do, and then we moved on. You know, it's like I went back in the water. What can I tell you? You know.
Yeah. After Jaws 3D, it was okay.
Even my movie references are old. I meant Hunger Games. Purge. This time it's for real.
Have you done? When was the last time? Like, have you mined any old jokes? And they're like, well, I better swap out the Jaws 3D reference for a Hunger Games. Have you done that for reals?
No. The only time, like, here's the thing. Like, I just did an hour. Okay, so usually what you do after the hour is like you try and like basically, let's use the term bidet. Yourself of the jokes you've been telling for, you know, weeks, years, months, whatever, and then start again. And I think I'm at the point now where it's like, I don't know if I have it in me to start again with the new hour, because I've done a few hours now. Some are good, some are bad, whatever. But I would just say that, you know, it really is hard. That is the cliff when you're looking into that darkness of like, I need another hour of material now. It's really difficult. And, you know, the whole thing of like recycling and referencing, that's the cool thing about a joke when it's alive like that. You can't do that with a song, you know? You cannot do that. Pick a song and let's see if we can update it. Like Hotel California, would that work with La Quinta Inn?
Nope,
I doubt it.
I don't think so. I don't think so. All right.
Jump in, dude. Help me out, dude. Tag me.
I was about to.
Tag me.
Better reference than that. Come on.
Yeah. A Holiday Inn Express.
But I would say that people equate comedy to music too much, and that's a mistake because music is forever. Comedy is not. Comedy is like firecrackers. It's just up in the air. Bang, 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 bang,
but don't you feel like there's some specials? Like, everyone's a special. Yeah.
That's why it's like amazing. Like, an Eddie Murphy or, you know, like Sam Kinison, who I love. I think never got the due as a comic that he deserved. I use him as a template sometimes where I go, like, that's the kind of, like, that's what we need. We need that guy right now. We need that guy to just come up and, like, cry bullshit on the whole scene. And it would be cool. And all I'm going to say is that, like, you know, the audience that does dig it, we have to embrace them more. We really do. Instead of this whole, like, you know, everybody, this is for every, it's not. It's for a select group of people. And hopefully they will tell their friends and they will come and enjoy it. Or if not, then we'll keep working. That's my plan, is just work to those people. And, like, you know, not insult or get in anyone's face. Like, that's what the whole tweet, like, I hate doing that stuff. Just make sure that I'm hitting the people that I know like it, you know?
Well, that's the thing where it's like you said, you don't like to equate comedy to music, but like in that way, I think comedy can be like music where, you know, when you're a musician and you say you want to play like, you know, metal or hip hop or jazz, it's like, well, someone's not going to go, it's like, you know, you guys are a really good metal band, but did you ever think about sounding like Coldplay? So everyone likes you, you know, no one, like, it's like someone doing, but yet for comedy.
I bet that does happen with music though.
I think, in the early days.
Yeah. But like Slayer's not going to change it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess it just depends on what you want as a performer. Like, if you're doing it for you and you want to, you know, be able to just basically survive and sustain, then, you know, you can still do exactly what you want to do. If you want, you know, I think those kinds of conversations are when people are like, I want to be rich and I want to be famous. And they're like, all right, well, then, I don't know, try to be broader. I don't know what to say.
But then that just kind of becomes a conversation about, like, you know, art over commerce.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If someone's more into the commerce than the art, then I feel like that's when they would be like, well, I need to be the Coldplay of comedy. Yeah, as opposed to, but I really do believe, it's so funny. It's like when people try to appeal to everyone, I feel like the ones who really do break through are the ones who actually do what I think is counterintuitive and do the opposite of, like, they become more themselves. Because then you stand out more.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not, if you try to speak to everybody, you're not speaking to, you speak to nobody. Yeah. So
that's a really good, that's a shirt. Are they selling that?
Oh, no, no. There's a shirt press up front, though.
Trademark it real quick. Oh, Chris, trademark it.
TM, Nerds Industries, 2014.
If guys could get trans stamps, that would be mine right there.
in a Chinese character.
But I'd say that the people who listen to your show and that know you guys, and especially the Meltdown like audiences, they are into the performance. They are supporting the performer. They are a part of the show. They're kinetic. It's all happening. And that's what I tried to do with the Comedy Underground, which is like a club show is different than a theater show. Theater show, you really are doing a performance. And I've done enough theater stuff where I realized I'm not a theater act. I'm never going to be one. I've done specials in theaters. It doesn't look good. looks like a sweaty old Jew, just basically telling his dirty jokes. And in the club, that's where I do my show.
Because you need to be in it with wherever all the people are, not separated.
Yeah. I don't like the distance, and I also don't think that my act is really a theater act. I mean, I've seen great theater comics like a Lewis Black. When I toured with Mitch Hedberg and Lewis Black, I was like, these two guys are theater acts. I'm not. I'm just the other guy. And these two guys are theater acts, because Mitch Hedberg, before he passed, did theaters. And he was like pretty much kind of ahead of this whole like comics do theaters on their own without like support. And that kind of now is the way you go if you have that kind of following, where you can bring in a lot of people. You'll do a theater show. I never had a problem with doing multiple shows at a club. I think that's a lot of fun to do like an early show and then a late show and, you know, mix it up, you know, work on material, all that kind of stuff. And in the theater thing, you really do feel it better be all kind of set in stone. It really better be finished because you're doing a theater show.
It is. It's much more presentational. But I'm like you, that I like kind of being in it with people, and I like every show to be different because you can interact
exactly
without you know, it's very hard to interact in a large space because people in the back are like, I can't see who he's talking to.
Yes,
right there. They're not part of that because they're in a separate.
Yeah, I remember
part.
Early on I think we did a Nerdist show at a theater, and you were talking to someone up front and you weren't repeating what they said because I don't think you were used to it yet.
People in the back are like, what are you doing?
yeah, exactly.
But it's nice when you can. It's also nice when you can see the faces of everyone in the room,
right?
And sort of like
face of disgust.
Feels real good.
That happens sometimes. I've gotten a lot better at ignoring those, like if someone looks like they're not having a good time. I realize, like, oh yeah, I don't have to call that out to everyone.
You don't.
Yeah,
I just always did because I needed to comment on whatever was happening.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's tough because it's like you'll see a guy cross arm, just, you know, not having a good time, but everyone else around him is, and he's like, just leave him alone. Maybe he's having a bad time.
Yeah, maybe he's having a bad day,
or maybe he's having a good time, but you don't know that because you don't know that guy.
Yeah, like, got permanent bitch face.
That would be fantastic. Well, I'm not that great a comic, but I do know this, that like when the crowd comes and they expect some kind of like something between Cirque du Soleil and some kind of a reading or something like that, they're going to be disappointed, and I feel bad for them because I know it's really hard to get people off their computers and devices to actually come see live comedy. And I would say for most of these people, they should just stick to like, you know, the other type of comedy, whatever they like.
I don't know. You know,
you do it. Some of them come down, I think, with false, you know, like they really don't know what they're getting into.
You said that about yourself the last time. You're like, I'm not that great a comic. But that's not, I mean, you can't actually believe that.
Yeah, I do.
But that's ridiculous. You know, I mean, people.
I'm in a comic book store, guys. I'm in the back of a comic book store right now.
Hey, this is where we live.
All right. I know this is where you guys.
Jesus Christ,
this
man.
This is your fortress.
I can't believe you just said about it. I can't believe it. But I mean, you have to know. I mean, and you saying you're not a theater act, maybe you don't like doing theaters, but you could. That doesn't mean you couldn't be a theater act if you wanted to. Maybe you just don't want to.
I don't want to.
But you're good. But of course,
I
want to
be a casino act. Hardcore, just for the whales and players.
Yeah. See, only Indian casinos.
Yes, only Res Land.
But you,
I'm a boat act, goddammit.
No, but you know that you can do. But you know that you have a skill set that most people don't have in the world. You have to know that.
No, I enjoy what I do. I enjoy. I've been very lucky that I've gotten a chance to do a lot of comedy
over a lot of years. What makes a good comic then? What makes a great comic?
I really think everybody has their idea of what makes a great comic, what makes whatever. But I would say that we do live in a world now where the next generation of comics are already self-promoting and all this kind of stuff. And that the comedy itself sometimes seems to be the last thing that they're thinking about because they're exhausted from trying to get work and promoting and all that kind of stuff. That, like, you know, the fact that they're pumping this stuff out to an audience that seems to be apathetic about it is kind of sad, because I spent years in open mics performing to other comics and nobody. And you know what? We really didn't have an alternative. It was like either that or like don't go and have a real job, you know? And that's what we did. We did our real jobs and we did that. And I was like, you know, now it seems that like everybody is in the business and then they're working on being a comic. And I'm like, you know, I feel bad for them and it's not their fault. They're adapting to the world we live in right now.
Everyone essentially is like social media is essentially just a promotion tool, but a lot of times without anything to promote. It's like, well, I'm just promoting. Yeah.
Yeah. Just being aware, being in the ether so people know that you exist. And it's really, it's kind of a bummer that you have to do that.
It's really sad that, like, it would be like, hey, this is a fun thing to do. And now it's like the manager's like, you got to do this. You have to. You
know, that's what everyone's
like
doing.
It's some weird West Wing moment. You know, like I'm the president. I have to make a hard decision. You got to. Well, you got to Instagram, dude.
I guess I'm lucky because I actually like do. I actually I enjoy that stuff. And because, quite frankly, it would be too hard to do it if I didn't enjoy it because it's such a part of what I mean, like it's because I technically have to do it a lot. If I didn't actually like doing it, I would be miserable.
I don't think you have to anymore, though. I mean, I know you like doing it and you're going to continue to, but like it's like you have a show on. It's like you're
the core of At Midnight, the source material is all social media stuff.
Yeah,
it's all community. So,
but you're going to be there. You're going to get it all. Every night. Every night you do a show, you're going to have it there for you.
Yeah, but he has to do it.
No, I'm saying, but I couldn't, if I didn't love the source material, I would have I think the show would be different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't.
I'd say you didn't have to love it.
That would be great. You should do that as a reverse dimension show.
Just like,
you eye roll all the time. Another tweet?
Oh, why? What's so important?
That's called Tosh.0.
Oh, hey!
Wow.
No, that's just his style. It's just.
Listen, either way, here's the point.
It's not a shot. It's fine. Mm-hmm. We're all just in it together.
I see a little somebody jumping ship here. With the Meltdown Show.
No, you
could be the renegade show.
Yeah. This is my bread and hopefully someday butter.
this could you know, what would be like the best case scenario from the Meltdown Show? Like,
we have 8 episodes and people watch it.
There you go. See, now that there's nothing more humble than that.
It's funny because, you know, people, like when we got the pilot, I was like, wow, we got a pilot. That we have like a documentation of the show that we've been doing for years and working really hard at. That's great. People are like, well, do you think it's going to get picked up? I was like, I mean, if it does, that's great. But if it doesn't, this is pretty cool, too. We got this thing.
Exactly.
Then it got picked up and everyone's like, how many episodes do you think? It's like, do you think it's going to be like 8 or 10 or 12? I go, at this point, it doesn't matter because there's going to be multiple episodes. So that's nice. We're going to have these episodes. And then, like, and now everyone's, like, starting to be like, what do you think you're going to get?
Second season, bro?
Yeah, you're like, it would be nice, but why? Like, it's like, it's not a thing until it's a thing.
The
so
funny thing, and I also, from what I think I know about you, is that if something blew up way bigger than you thought it would, then that's more stress and responsibility for you that you probably don't want.
Sure, no, it's like if it blows up, that's fine, you know. Like,
that's
it's
not
like,
why you do it.
That's not why. No, it's not why you do it. To do something with the idea that it's going to be a thing, it's like that's why I'm worried about.
Well, like, throwing the question back to me for what I would want if my show blew up. Well, thank you. I didn't know we ran into a mumble core situation here. No, I was just going to say.
You asked the fucking question.
I know. Well, I didn't know it was going to be a Gettysburg Address of thoughts here. I was just going to say that, like, it's going to blow up. There's an audience for it. And at that point, decisions will be made for what it is. I think the Comedy Underground show, the best thing I could do with that show would be to tour some of these comics, to get them out on the road, to like see what that's about, to really connect with the audience. Because I do think that like watching it is cool, but seeing it live is what's more important.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that you get to see an unfiltered version of it is a great taste. And that's why what you guys have been doing for years and years and years is definitely due to be seen. And there is an audience for it. I've been here live. I've seen what goes on here.
Yeah.
There's a huge audience for it. So I think it's going to be a hit.
It would be nice. It'd be nice if it was. That's all I'm going to say. Just I want more money is all I want.
I think you want also the ability to go to a town with a group of your friends and be able to recreate this in other places. It'd be fun, too.
I just want to make stuff. You know, I don't know. I don't think about it much more than just the doing it. I'm afraid of the show, though. Like the idea of like, you know, like just kids should just start shows in their towns or in their neighborhoods or, you know, but I'm afraid that kids are going to start starting shows. In the hopes that, like, then they'll make a TV show.
Well, but that's most of what people do.
No, but, like, that's, like, that wasn't really the case. Like, it's like, we didn't start this show with the hopes that it would become a TV show.
Yeah.
You know, like, people that started open mics, people that start, like, shows and bars and stuff like that, I'm afraid that people are going to, like, start doing this thing where they're like, it's like, we got to make it. We got to do this. We got to put, people should just be, comics should be putting it together stand-up
shows. You know what? I don't think that's right to say why people should do anything. If they, as long as they're putting comedy into the world, I don't really care why they're doing it as long as it's good. And if it exposes people in those towns to comedy that they wouldn't have otherwise seen, or it inspires someone to like, oh my God, I never would have known I could do this.
Yeah. Right.
Then it doesn't really, it doesn't really matter. I just feel like.
So the intentions you don't care about. It's more about like the
fact
that
I'm getting really
it.
Granular, I might be like, well, that guy's probably a dude. That guy's kind of weird because he just wanted to be famous, but that's his prerogative to just want to be famous, yeah. Or it's their prerogative to start whatever they want. But look at all the stuff that blossomed around it because of that. I feel like it's a, you know, it's I don't know. I don't feel like it's horrible.
I'll save you.
Please.
Either way, I was going to say that I agree with you, which is like no one should do something with the hopes of being famous.
Yeah.
You know, it should be for the love of the show and like being with your buddies and doing shows for your friends.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's cool. And if something cool comes from that, that's great. But this generation, they are so smart. They really do know that, like, you know, there's no need for us to, like, you know, it's like backyard wrestling, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, thank God they shared that with the world, you know? that was great. Every other thing that you see on the net, not so much, but that was like, you know, so maybe what we're hoping is like salmon swimming upstream, that like maybe 1 in 1,000,000 will be, or 1 in 1,000 will be something totally different, something cool that takes it to the next level, and you got to hope for that. So I agree with both of you here, but if we could say one thing, it's like, I love how people always go to anybody who's involved in TV. It could be anybody. They'll go like, so how many episodes? Mm-hmm. And how are you looking at a hiatus season of quarter? What quarter are you going to? Like, they know all the TV terms, and yet they're working at a Carl Jr.'s, and they're like giving you this thing like they put you on the defensive. It's like, listen, no episodes. Listen, viral video of you yelling at your chick. It's like, I know we're all in the business here, but God, you know, give them some credit.
Yeah, somebody, yeah. So much of the curtain has been pulled back.
Yes.
People really understand all of those things. The fact that, you know, I could talk to my mom and she's like, well, the fact that she knows the term pickup is a weird.
Isn't that great?
Did you get picked up? Did you get a pickup? Did I get a pickup?
Yeah.
How do you know about these things?
That's hilarious. That's great. Yeah, they do know that.
Everyone's much more savvy now. But I don't think that it's wrong. I mean, look. You know, when I was young, I'm like, oh my God, I would see these performers and like, that's what I want. I want this adoration, and comedy is kind of the thing that makes me want, like, I want to get it through this lens. But then at a certain point, I kind of, you know, I gave up on all that, trying to get that, because it's, you know, it can be a very disappointing enterprise. And it's
sure.
Like, oh, you know, I just like telling jokes and making people laugh, and this is who I am. And so I relaxed into, I'm just doing this for me.
Yeah.
So I may have started in that douchier area, but I feel like I relaxed into, oh, but this is why I'm actually doing it, because I love it and it's fun.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
like, I don't know anything about music, but I assume you guys are to the festivals and all that kind of stuff, you know?
You were doing comedy at the festivals?
No, I'm saying like comedy. These music festivals, I assume, is like, you know, it's a scene and it's whatever, but it is good for a lot of the, you take the headliners out of it, and you got these bands that are kind of in that weird place of like, they have a following, they're kind of known, they were invited to the festival, and now it's really for them to punch up, basically try and get that next thing. And being in a band is super difficult. As we all know, there's no money in product anymore. It's all about touring.
Yeah.
And touring, even, like, that is so touch and go. You never really know. And it's year to year. It's almost like farming, basically.
And you have to rely on
had a horrible
other...
year this year.
But then
wiped out.
Then you also had... Yeah, the Locusts came and ate our guitars.
Yeah. I don't know what it was. It was that... it was the Hangover movie. Knocked everybody out.
But then you have to... But then you also have to... In that situation, you have to rely on other people before you can do your thing.
Whereas, music?
I love... I mean, I cannot imagine... If I couldn't, like, if my stand-up had to rely on, like, oh, I guess I can't perform tonight because the guys in the group couldn't make it, or they wasn't important to them or whatever.
Yeah, it's more of a team effort there. But I think music is the hardest, and then there's comedy, and well, I put acting above both of those, because I can only imagine what these people go through. These actors, like, you know, let's just walk out on the street here on Sunset. Everybody there is a character actor, I assume. You know,
I assume
everybody's
so,
waiting on a call from whatever Game of Thrones or something. You know, so you know it's really difficult in the arts, I guess you could call it. But I never consider myself an artist. I don't even consider myself whatever talented. I consider myself like a craftsman. You know, like the guy who makes coins. Like I'm that guy. Whatever.
But that's a talent.
Mint. I guess so. I don't know.
You know how to take something. You know how to look at something and turn it upside down and find out what's funny about it and spin it. And you know, your skill set at this point is you could just start talking about anything on stage, and it's probably going to come out as that sort of comedy joke structure. It's not like you're on stage going, I don't know, what's funny about, like, you start talking and you have a rhythm and it comes out this way and you know how to express stuff and ideas, maybe even before your conscious mind knows what you're doing.
If you're saying I'm making it up as we go along, then kind of yes. No, I know what I'm doing. I mean, I've written jokes, and then I've also tried to wing it and all that kind of stuff. And it's good when there's a balance of the two. But, you know, I think, you know, comics talking about comedy endlessly and, like, what it is, like, I think it might do, like, a little bit of a disservice to, like, the people who, you know, want to get into comedy, because I think they think that it's all this, and it's really a lot of alone in a room with a pad, or you listening to a tape of yourself, and you're bombing, and, like, you're hating yourself, and it's almost like one of those things where, like, you know, if I fast forward just 2 minutes, you know, I'll make it up, you know, you're trying to make these deals with yourself of, like, can I, you know, like, just get through this horrible set, and I think that it really is a lonely gig, and you know, whoever wants to get into it should know that, you know.
Well, when was the last time you bombed?
I was at the Improv last night. I consider that a bomb. Or,
really?
Or a tie, maybe. No, I'm trying new material, so. No, I say 50-50 for me, because, you know, I really never go up to kill. You know, I really just go up to, like, try and get that new joke. It's like, that's what keeps me, you know, once you've been doing it so long, like, for me, it's always been about material, but I would say getting that new joke, that really is like, ah, that's great. Mm. And then you'll redo it and it'll suck. And then you're like back to square one. But still, for that moment, you feel like, oh, yeah, everything was working my way. Mark Twain was smiling on me or something. I don't know.
And are you okay with that? Does it bother you anymore? Or do you don't care because you're
bombing? Yeah. I think it bothers everybody every time. I think every time you bomb, you feel like, what happened there? You know, this and that. And I've talked to, like, huge comics about it. And, like, at the end of the day, like, you know, they're pretty right about it, which is that it's like, it's never the audience's fault. It's your fault, but it is kind of their fault in terms of, like, not letting us in, putting up those walls that I keep talking about of these, like, you know, I don't want to hear about that, or they're kind of priggish or prudish. I mean, you know, you don't bring that into a comedy club. You got to kind of let your hair down and let it happen, you know?
Well, I said to the audience on, you know, like, I come out and say hi to our audience on the TV show before, and I say, look, you know, you just have a slight job, which is to just have fun, because the more fun you have, the comics will sort of feed on that joy and you will make them funnier. So don't be defensive and go, you better make me laugh. It's like, no, you guys make us funny. You know, like, if you are laughing, we will burrow into that, and we will open up and we will give you more of what you want. But if you come in defensive and, like, you better win me over, then that's a, you know,
that's a sassy audience member.
Well, it is a sassy audience member, but it's also like a comic audience relationship is not just, it might seem like it's one way, but it's a dialogue. You're creating a relationship, and the audience has to kind of meet you a little bit so that you can give them more of what they want and have a better time. You can't force people to have fun.
See, I can't imagine you having that problem, since, like, people know you, and the audience that would come see you is, like, really into what you do, you know, from the Talking Dead show to this show. I mean, like, you know, I could see, like, for the At Midnight show, that they would just be, like, adoration, like, just, like,
well, no,
super cool fans.
People are very nice, but they also, I feel like the more known you get, the more expectations there are, certainly. Mm-hmm. And, like, oh, I thought you were funny, you know. So there is a little bit of pressure there. But, yes, it gets easier in the sense that whole thing that you have to do when no one knows who you are on stage of the first, like, minute. Yeah. Very quickly, here's who I am, and here's what I'm about, and here's why it's okay to like me. And now all the jokes. Like, you don't – when people come to see you on purpose, you don't have to do that as much, because there's a little bit of a shorthand because they know what you're about.
Okay.
So you – but you must feel that too. People come out to see you on purpose.
Yeah, no, I – like I said, I'm always trying to bring the new material, but I think a lot of times that – the audience comes for other reasons, you know, than, like, really to have a good time, which is the problem with all comedy. But I'm not going to sit here and, like, go through the audience and their, like, psyche on this stuff. We have to deal with what we get. And at the end of the day, like, we're just glad they're there, because I've done shows with nobody there. You know, I mean, like, I've done shows with where it's, like, super empty. And the guy working the bar is just looking at you like, dude, thanks, man. I had a car payment coming up. That ain't gonna happen. Yeah. Thanks, dude. I'm on the bus now. Thanks to you.
Well, do you ever feel like it's important to, and for you, is it just about being funny, or do you ever go, you know what? I really want to challenge the audience to try to like this thing that they might normally go, oh, I don't know if I'm allowed to like that, but do you try to challenge them? Do you want to challenge them in any way?
Well, as I said on Comics Drinking Coffee, or as I call it, millionaires wearing seatbelts. Humor. No, I could care less. I see it all as a knife fight, you know. I really do. I'm not trying to underplay it or overplay it. I'm just saying, like, you never know what's going to happen in the club. I think that's the cool part of it. That was to make it every time. Like, that's why, like, it becomes addictive to hang out at clubs. Like, you'll see guys, like, I've seen guys that I started with for years, you know, over 25 years ago. They're still hanging at the clubs because it becomes like that's what we do. And we kind of like the idea that, like, this is our place. And you never know what's going to happen at the club. Like, it's just like it could be a great show. It could be a horrible show. There could be, you know, just great stuff happening. And it's I guess there's that illusion.
Yeah.
That, like, that could happen. But I would say that, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, you know, we just need to get people off their computers to come down and see it now. You know?
Yeah. Well, I think and I think there is something that happens even if people know who you are and what you're about. They're more open to liking you, but if you get lazy and you don't, and you go, well, they'll like whatever I say. I mean, like, how many times we've been at podcasts where, like, these people know what the podcast is, they know exactly what we're about, yeah, they're pretty on board everything, and then we get a little lazy, and then there's a lull, and it's like, oh yeah, that's right. You still have to write, you know,
right,
like
right.
you'll get that forgiveness for a little bit.
Yeah.
But then at a certain point, if they're there for an hour or 2 hours, like, you still have to do your job.
Oh, absolutely. That's what makes this a real job, is that, like, you have that audience and they follow you every day. That's like being a talk show host. I mean, that's the hardest job in show business, being a talk show host, you know? And, you know, I think that, like, doing that day and day and day and day and, like, engaging and talking, and now especially the way it is, it's so competitive. Like, when you think of Johnny Carson's days, you know, which is before my days too, by the way, I'm not that old. You know, the fact that he didn't have more balls about being the only game in town is, like, really does make him, like, a saint. Like, he could have been like, oh, you don't like that joke? Well, go fuck yourself.
Where are you going to go?
You're gonna watch Bonanza? On the other, there's nothing else going on here. There's four channels, yeah, guys. Deal with it.
Three of them are color bars.
Yeah, exactly.
Stay tuned.
Now I'm just going to look at my wallet. All right? It's huge. I mean, like, the fact that he didn't have that kind of balls is really just amazing.
I think because... I just think it didn't occur to him to have those balls because, you know, 20 million people a night were watching that show.
Absolutely.
So there was no, you know, I think it wasn't really until, like, who's this Letterman fellow that's following me that people seem to be interested in.
Now, Letterman in the beginning, like when I first did Letterman, that was like when you really do feel like, wow, I'm in the game now. I'm a real comic.
When was that?
Whatever, 10, 15 years ago or something like that, I did Letterman. And, like, you know, to be fair to, like, that show, they used a lot more comics in the beginning, and then it kind of, like, dissipated. And I think that was a mistake, that they should have, like, really energized the comics. Jay used way more comics than Letterman ever did. And, like, you know, the guys that I know that do it consistently, like a Nick Griffin or Jake Johansson, they did like 30, 40, 50 appearances. You know, like, that was really cool to watch them do it, because we all know how hard it is to do stand up to a network, you know, like,
yeah,
spec. So, you know, it was really cool to watch them do it.
Well, I guess it's probably, I mean, you know, I know Letterman did stand up, but I wouldn't say he identifies as a stand up, but Jay definitely seems like he's a comic.
Jay
and
was
he,
a stand-up, yeah,
he appreciates the art form of comedy, you know, and so that's why he wanted to have comics on. And I'm sure Dave was like, eh, whatever.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think they both did their time, but Jay definitely was. The fact that Jay still does gigs really does show you that, like, he's a comic. I mean,
yeah,
like, he really is out there.
Well, the fact that he did gigs every Sunday night just to doing stand-up in Hermosa Beach, just because, I mean, he's, you know, he didn't have to do that.
And corporate gigs.
And what?
And corporate gigs.
And corporate gigs.
Yeah.
That's when you know, like, if you have other options and you still do stand-up, that's probably the thing you're passionate about. It's the guys who bail the second they don't have to do stand-up anymore. You're like, oh,
yes,
okay.
There's a lot of guys like that, too.
Yeah.
You know?
But you know, in their defense, too, it's fucking hard. It's a grind. It's a grind to, you know, to go out. And I'm about to go out and do it again. I haven't done it for a few months, and I'm about to go out and do it again. And I'm excited, but I also know, like, I'm already trying to conserve the energy. Like, I'm doing three shows on a Saturday night.
It's hard.
And it's just like...
Oh, yeah, I saw you added that third show.
We added it the third show, and it's like, you know, by the time you get into the third show, you forget, did I say this show or last show? Or I don't, like, my brain starts to scramble.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. Like at the Meltdown shows, like how many shows do you have a night? You have like one long show or like a couple little ones?
Just one show, about 2 hours.
Okay, so that would go forever if you guys wanted to, because there's no last call at a comic book store, is it?
No, but like the store closes, so we kind of have
to. And then everybody's mom.
And then the name.
Sorry, I was trying to get to that.
Nice. No, it's good. I like that you admitted, like, I was trying to work that in earlier.
It fit
really well right
mom
here.
Mom joke.
Well, also the neighborhood around here, we can't make too much noise at
night. Oh, really?
Because then the apartment buildings will complain, and then the cops come down.
Wow.
And it's
when will this air? Because I want to give a shout out for the comics that have been on the Underground show, because they really
please.
Joe DeRosa is one of my favorites.
Joe's
great.
A transplant from New York, he's out here working on the Pete Holmes show.
Nice. Yep.
Flew him back, coach, to do the show. Great. Joe, Jay Oakeson, Jermaine. That was the first episode, and then this week, then we had Pete Davidson, who, have you seen this guy? He's great.
Pete Davidson, yeah.
Brad Williams, amazing.
Yeah, Brad Williams is really funny, too. I hung out with him a bunch in Montreal. Pete Davidson was a guy that I saw in the distance at the airport, and I was like, fuck that dude. And then I saw him perform later that night in Montreal, and I was like, fuck that
dude.
He's
great. He's a young guy. He already knows who he is. He's really good. This week we have, I think it's another really, really strong show. We have Kurt Metzger. Do you know Kurt?
Yeah.
He is so funny. And he just did an hour, too. So I can't wait to see that. It's going to be amazing. And Nikki Glaser, she rocked out.
Best.
And Mike Vecchione, who I think is probably one of the best joke writers I've ever seen. I think his stuff is just on point. It's great. And, you know, I'm just the host. I'm kind of the I'm the glue. You know, and like my jokes were like also tame, and we were running out of time, so we cut most of my shit out. You know, and like just like I was like, let the comics roll. I mean, there's so much good.
That's
so
nice.
Much good.
That's a comic. That's a comics comic. That's a I love. It's good. That's a good thing to do. I'm always on our show. Now I sound like an asshole because I'm admitting this. I'm not saying this to because I want any kind of appreciation for it. But I will always say like. Cut my stuff first, you know, like, or if I say something in another comic, it's like, cut mine, let them say it. I just feel like it's better for comedy. It's better for comedy when more people are funny. And it's also nice to watch people thrive. Like, and I fucking love Nikki Glaser.
Yeah,
she's so
great.
Fucking funny.
I love her.
Great.
She crushes on our show every single time.
She is like one of my favorite people on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've just had, like, a ton of great comics on it. And they're, like, you know, the guys that, like, started when I started and also these new people. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen Junior Stopka. This guy, he opened for Doug Stanhope. He is great, man. He's like, a total, like, there's nobody like him right now. He's so good. And, you know, he would work in your room. And, you know, I was like, you know, for the Underground show, I really wanted, like, straight ahead, like, kind of basically raw comics.
Yeah.
And, like, you know... The alternative world, or I don't even know what you guys call it anymore. Like,
I don't know. I don't know what they call it.
What do you call it?
I don't know. Alt, whatever.
It's tough to say because it's so. It doesn't really.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to insult. The, yeah. Whatever.
No, I'm just
comedy and crafts. Like someone might be weaving while you're on.
It's called comedy and wearing hooded sweatshirts.
Okay,
yeah,
there you go.
That's what it is.
He kind of hate my dad, but not really.
Yeah, I say I hate my dad, but he was, you know, really there for me.
He was a dude. Yeah, he was a dude. Yeah. He's winking at you from the back.
Yeah, yeah.
It's called.
He was just a guy. He was just a guy trying to make.
I think it's called comic comedy.
So there's, you know, the whole idea was like, let's bring out like the blue comics. Let's give them a place to do this whole thing. But at the end of the day, it wasn't about dirty. It was just about like hard funny. And you know, I learned some important lessons on the show about like, you know, the kind of the whole idea of like just like it being, you know, like you said, like shock, you know, whatever that kind of stuff. That's the crowds are too smart for that. They get it. You know, they just want like good. They just want good jokes.
But also contextualizing it. I mean, I think a lot of comedy and what people are willing to tolerate. It has to do with the context. And so if you put a really dirty comic on a show and people aren't expecting it, they might be like, whoa, that was weird. What just happened? But it's like, this is what this show is all about.
Then
people are like, oh, okay. Like, I think audiences, for the most part, are cool as long as they know what the rules are. And generally, when people get upset, it's people who didn't know what the rules were or who weren't there or who lacked the context and went, oh, well, that was fucking – how could that guy – it's like – yeah, but in context of the thing, it didn't seem – is strange because you're seeing it out of context. And so much of comedy is context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. That's why, like, when you see just, like, a clip or whatever, you're always like, I don't know, they're not getting the whole
story. I was like, you have to be in the room. You need to be in the room. There, you need to see what was going on. You'd understand why these people reacted this way or this person said this. Are you doing a bunch of dates on the road now? Or to?
I'm going
to
be – does this air today? Or, like, when does it air?
No, no.
It's airing now.
Soon.
Well, soon I have plenty of stuff happening.
May 23rd? It's in a couple few weeks. Sorry, okay. A few weeks.
Well, they can go to like davidtell.com and they could also go to Comedy Direct. I'm sorry, Comedy Central Direct.
Oh, to get your specials. Yeah.
I for the people who've seen it, like the feedback was just amazing. And, you know, my downloads are connected to a charity called Operation Purple, which is a summer camp for the veterans. Children, basically, a lot of them are multiple deployments. They're, you know, these kids don't really get a chance to like enjoy the summer because they've been moved, and you know, just a lot of things have been happening with these people. And if they go to my site, they could see it. Operation Purple. I've given money. I'm going to give money again at the end of the eight week season. And you know, it's a really good cause. And like, I've done a lot of stuff for the USO and all kinds of stuff.
That's so cool.
Now that we're coming to this point where they're coming home, cannot forget them. Got to support them.
Nice.
It's a good thing. And
come jokes for the kids.
There you go. Well, now I just.
Yes. What? Did that ruin it?
I think it did.
Okay.
No. It's totally.
No,
cool.
But that.
But the people who are involved in Chariot, I mean, they are just like angels. It really is good to be a part of it. So.
And does that add any kind of. I mean, that's. Is it like being able to connect yourself with a cause or something that's bigger than you? Like that.
I hate self-promoting, so that's like really the only way I could get. I said that when I did the special because I never thought of being done with the special. I think you know this. We were talking about audio mixes for months, for years. I've been just editing stuff from Dave's Old Porn to the DVD for that you know we can't put out yet to the special to the underground show. It's like you know you're in this editing world and you never think about it like well eventually it'll be on the air. And then I was like, wow, I'm gonna have to like really promote, but I'm like not this time. I'm not gonna just. I hate talking about myself. I'm not doing it. And I had done a charity event for the Operation Purple people, and it was a very low turnout, and it made me really angry. And I was like, you know, it would be cool to connect this to my stuff coming out because I'm going to have to talk to a lot of people. Like, this show gets a lot of cool people listening to it who are really into, like, you know, supporting and being a part of something bigger than themselves. So I was like, doing these kind of things and talking about it kind of makes it all seem right. Like, it balances it out instead of just all about me.
Well, it's nice, and I actually was not aware of that charity before, so it's nice to know.
Well, listen, hippie, there's been a war on.
What are you talking about, man? I just want to smoke grass and put flowers in gun barrels.
But it's cool. So that's just like that's like another part to it. So if people are thinking about like you know, hey, should I check it out or not? That might help sway them, I guess.
And so you, what's your rule on when a special airs? Like how much? Do you, it's like, okay, all new material now, or is it like 60% new material? Or?
Well, from the downloads, I think I could do 99% of it and no one care. No, I really do think that it's good to shuffle it a bit. And, like some people do come out wanting to hear the joke that they just heard. You know, it's kind of like best ofs. And, you know, you try and do some of that, but then, you know, there's always that element of like, here's stuff I'm working on that I throw into it. So I'd say I'll just mulligan stew it, you know, mix it all together and see, you know. And then end with, of course, you know, a song parody or something.
Let's bring out a guitar.
Oh, can I do a shout-out since you guys are really cool with the comedy
world? Please, shout it out.
We just lost a great, actually, talk about, like, fringe comedy, Otto and George.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you guys probably – he's more East Coast because on O&A we did talk about, like, I was like, did he ever play L.A. or anything? And, like, he was probably more of a Vegas act than he was an L.A. act. But he was the rawest, differentest – puppet ventriloquist act that you will ever imagine. If you go to YouTube and check out Otto and George, you will see. And like that is definitely a guy who mixed it up hardcore and never changed his act from the beginning for anybody. So that really is like something to look at and to go like, wow, that's amazing that you know this guy even did this. So
yeah,
if
well,
you're into like crazy off the wall comedy, you should check it out.
And well, the idea of I think he probably came as far as Vegas because it's not like there's an L.A. comedy business per se. It's like, no, you don't get paid to do comedy in Los Angeles. It's like, oh, I'm in town, and I'll just get up and do a set. It's promotional. Or there's industry people coming out, or you're just performing for free, which is fine. That's totally fine. But it sounds like you know, at where he was, like, why would I go perform in Los Angeles if I could just go get paid to perform in Las Vegas?
Yeah, L.A. is a pretty theater town. Like, you have to do, like, a big theater here. And not many people who live here actually work here. They always go on the road.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I do, like, all the clubs here, you know, the Comedy Store and, you know, the Improv and Laugh Factory and stuff like that. So it does seem like it's, like, the guys that I never see because they're on the road, that's, like, they're just back for a couple days and they just do sets. So, you know, but I guess the crowds that do come, you know, like, they really do come to see their favorites. And, you know, it's very hard to start as a comic in L.A. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Very much so. Yeah.
I don't know where you guys started.
I started in L.A. Yeah, and I agree with you 100%.
It's way hard.
I think it's better to start in either your town or, like, a hub town nearby. And then from there, then you go to a place like Chicago or New York or San Francisco, and then you find yourself in a little bit of a scene and you get stronger, and then you, you know,
you come out here,
then you go to LA or you really hit New York hard.
Yeah, I don't recommend starting here.
But if you're hot or look like a young male vampire or something, get out.
Definitely.
Here.
What are you doing
right now?
What are you doing?
Don't even do comedy. Just come.
Just come out. Just let it happen.
You're saying just come.
No, I was talking to myself.
Oh, sorry.
Just come out.
Do you need some time for that? Yeah.
No, I'm done.
Okay, good.
Real fast.
Are you going to take Comedy Underground on the road as a show? Like
I'd like to tour it a bit, but I have no idea what's going to happen with it. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's not my show. It's the comic show, and it's Comedy Central show. It's their role. The special was my thing. I put all my money into it. I put all that kind of stuff into it. And the fact that, like, I took the same look and put it on that series, kind of, I really knew that it would work in that space, which is it was shot in New York, one club. And, you know, I think these kind of shows, the one that Jonah's doing, the one that even Adam Devine show, which is the
house party,
this is good because it gives, you know, when you start doing comedy, you don't have an hour of material. You don't necessarily have a place to put the material that you're doing anywhere, and yet the material's ready to be seen. And these kind of shows are great for, you know, guys who've been doing it for a while, but also the new guys to, like, get out there, like, to see what's going on. And I can tell you, like, most of the stuff I've ever done on TV, 70% of it sucked. And the only way I learned that it sucked was by doing TV, almost. Yeah. You know, I was like, wait, that didn't work on TV, you know? Yeah. I'm like, but it kills in the clubs. Oh, but it won't work on TV. So, I mean, it's important. It's part of the process. And, you know, so there you go. You're kind of like the, I guess you could say, like, the hipster, you know, pick your guy. Who would you be? Bud Friedman or?
No, God.
You got the double monocle there, glasses, I would call them.
Good evening.
I don't know which one to be insulted by more.
Wait, Bud has done more for comedy than you think. He really
I'm just talking about his hosting abilities on Evening at the
Improv.
But
about Rodney Dangerfield, that guy has done more from comedy than anybody.
Yes.
He was like the UN of comedy, by the way.
No, he
was like,
great.
Save comics, you know, bring them out of obscurity and, like, make them stars.
Well, it's you know, doing comedy in a live setting.
Sorry.
You can sort of, it can be about more than just the joke because you're there with people and you can kind of, your energy can drive a lot of it. But on TV, it's kind of like a theater experience where it's really you and one entity or you and one person. And I think it hinges more on the writing and the performance rather than just the, like, hey, I can sort of fudge it a little bit. You know, like, you get a little more forgiveness when you can build an hour-long story with the crowd and fuck around and they kind of get the shorthand. But, you know, when you're under the microscope of television and you have 4 minutes and, you know, it really is kind of about the writing because the people at home don't get that intimate club experience that most people get.
And remember, you're a guest. People don't know you. Like, you know, you're like the guy that night, you know, so it's not like they, you know, oh, here comes my favorite, you know, you're not a recurring character on a talk show or anything like that.
I like doing the Meltdown show, the TV version of the Meltdown show, because I decided to burn through bits that I'd been leaning on for a while.
Yeah,
good.
Because I was like, oh, well, now this is going to force me to not lean on those bits and to write new stuff. So
and you have them on something now. Like, now it's like
there you go.
Yeah, it's like putting out an EP almost. Like, you know, you just oh, here's a single. Here, I just pop that out.
Yeah. So it was nice to does every set that you do, are you trying to slot new stuff into it every single time?
Hopefully, yeah. Like, you know, it really depends what it is, but like. After the hour, you know, like, I go back to my tapes and say, like, what didn't make it, try and work on that a little bit. But I do think that, like, I've hit the wall right now. Like, I really can't wait to get on the road and, like, start mixing it up with the crowds just to see exactly, like, you know, what material they want to hear, and also like what material I'm going to come up with. Because I'm sick of promoting, basically.
You must trust yourself too to know, like, well, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to talk about, but I've done this a long time, and I'll just figure it out. It'll just come out.
No, I don't think. I think it really like is reading the crowd and going like, I think I could push it this far, and then pulling it back, and that kind of. That's how I do it. But I think a lot of other guys, like, you know, there's really huge comics that do the same kind of thing you guys are doing, which is that they're getting ready to do an hour. So they'll go out and hit clubs. They'll come to the Comedy Cellar in New York City and just work their material. And, like, even then they're like, you know, I don't think I'm ready, or I think I'm, you know, I need, like, another couple of weeks, or, you know, this kind of thing. So that never gets old, that whole thing of, like, you know, the material. Where is the material right now? Where am I? And, like, it would be really cool to be able to go, like, okay, I want to make a special. I got to go to the Special and Stuff store and get, like, I need 60 minutes, you know, 40 clean for network. And then, you know, just, like, you know, slot it in there, but it's never going to be like that. And that's when people go, like, when's the next special? I'd be like, I don't know. I don't, maybe never. You don't know. I mean, some guys are like, I'm putting out one every year regardless, and that's Jim Norton,
Louis,
Doug Stanhope, and these guys, Louis. I mean, that is impressive, if you ask me, because, like, you know, think about it. That's an hour of new. Just like, whoa, like, that's amazing. That's amazing turnaround.
It is. I think at least 2 years feels comfortable, because I feel like it can take a year to get an hour that you like, and then you can spend the next several months, like, really
tweaking,
tightening
it,
all the screws and making sure it's, like, all.
Yeah, I don't think people really need to like put that on themselves of, like, once a year.
It's, that's
like,
crazy, yeah.
Because then I think that's kind of relegating the creative process to, like, a.
Well, that's their journey. Legit. Maybe they do.
Sure. But this is my thought on their journey.
But you just said I don't.
Dumb, stupid journey.
Well, that sounds like a value judgment that you're placing on it now.
Yeah, it's a good value.
I say, like, you're right, a year and then a couple months of tweaking and then 3 to 4 years of substance abuse, coming back with a religious perspective on the whole thing.
Yes.
Softening up all of the dirtier stuff.
No, that's the one thing that's great about comedy. There's so much procrastination. There's just, like, you know, like, I remember, like, you know, back in the days of just, like, being a young comic where you're just like, oh, man, I got, like, the whole day. Like, I could have done a million things.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing, you know?
Well, yeah, that's – I still trick myself into thinking, oh, well I'm not – you know, when I – because I'm doing Caroline's in a week and a half.
From May 23rd?
May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
Okay, but you said this is coming out on May 23rd.
But he's in the real life right now. He's just talking to you about
it. Oh, yeah. I'm not promoting the thing.
Whoa,
yes.
Okay, how about this? No one said stuff about real life.
I did Caroline's a few weeks ago. I did Caroline's a few weeks ago. But
you rocked it, by the way.
Oh, thanks, man. No, it was really good. I really came out swinging.
I can't believe, like, Bill Cosby came up and just gave you a wink and a smile.
I know, just in the middle of the show. He didn't know where he was.
Caroline's is a good room and a bad room, so...
Well, it's I like it because I like the size of the room.
Yeah, size is amazing.
People are really nice, and I enjoy it. But what I really always trick myself into thinking, so I'm not going to schedule anything all day because naturally I'll spend that all day writing and talking about it.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, 6:30 rolls along. I'm like, I got to get to the show. I didn't fucking write anything today. I just walked around the city.
Yeah.
But Caroline's is a great place because that was, like, the only headline club in Manhattan. And, like, for years, that club was, like, they were so – they're the best to comics. I mean, like, they really – you could say one thing about the comedy scene in New York is that, like, the clubs there that do flourish and do well really support the comics. I mean, like, the Comedy Cellar is, like, the perfect example of where the comics basically can do whatever they want there. You know, they are super in sync with the owners, and they both feel the same way, which is just like, you come down to see the show, we have no idea who might drop by. It could be anybody. It could be Louis, it could be Chris Rock, it could be Aziz, but we have these core regulars here that you're going to see do new material, old material, whatever. We're going to give you the best show you can get on Groupon. No, and Caroline's the same way, which is that, like, they rotate in these headliners, and they also have, like, regular shows, and that's, like, that's what you need in any town. Like, you need that, like, to support the comedy. And, you know, they both have been doing it for years, and Caroline's was, like, when you headline at Caroline's, that was, like, a big deal. It really was. Like, you're like, wow, man, I made it. This is something I could bring, like, not my parents, but like my accountant's cousin too. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a great, this is almost a real.
Well, it's just smart. Like, oh, so people will come out if you let good comics be funny and you, you know, well, like they just sort of.
You're up against Broadway, remember. Wicked beats comedy any day.
Well, that's true. But you only need
Rocky the Musical, I saw it. That was a line. Man.
You only need to beat comedy. I mean, you only need to beat Broadway by a couple hundred people a night. You
that's
know,
true.
Like so. You know, in a city of, you know, what is it, 12 million people, whatever, in New York? I feel like, you know, just squeezing out, you're just wringing out of the Broadway audience just a couple hundred people a night. It's not too much to ask. Yeah.
12 million people, 8 million comics. the rest are all voiceover actors.
So it's 8 million comics, 4 million voiceover actors.
Yeah, the voiceover
no
people.
No one does anything
gotta
else.
Clear the air for their beautiful voices.
It's perfect.
It's excellent. So, what time is it, guys?
It's 4:15.
Oh, I have to go to another gigadoo. I thought it was an hour.
It is.
Nice head up.
I am sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, I think it just hit an hour. Yeah,
guys, I really appreciate you having me on, and I'm going to say it again. Congratulations to both of you guys on your shows.
Thank you very much. Congratulations on your show.
This is amazing. We were all it's a show bukkake in here.
It's a lot of just jets of show cum flying around and hitting each other in the face. Yeah, because last time you were here, none of us had shows on Comedy Central. There's no way this happens. So that means the next time you come back, we'll all have two shows each on Comedy Central.
We'll have our own webisodes again. We'll go back to that.
We'll go back to webisodes. I'm fine with that. All right, David Tell, good to see you, man.
Thank you guys so much.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 65th National Finals of Distinguished Young Women.
Every year, one girl from every state leaves her family, her whole life behind, for 2 weeks and spends each day training, practicing, preparing. Because to win this competition, she needs to wow a panel of judges with her academic record, her athletic ability, her speaking skills, and a show-stopping talent.
I met her and I was like, she's gonna win.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
When I sing that song about being a black woman in America, there's gonna be backlash about that.
Oh, I'm just so happy. So happy.
I don't wanna see them. I don't wanna talk to them.
And then we stayed with them for the next year, unpacking just what happened those 2 weeks in Mobile. I'm Shimol Yai, and from Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.